Chapter 8. Crossing over from Marshport into Paradise, Jesse found himself wanting a drink. The urge came over him sometimes just like that. No particular trigger, no real precipitating event. A sudden storm appearing over the water as if out of nowhere. Then he just wanted a drink right fucking now. He felt himself squeezing the steering wheel, as if lessening his grip even slightly would transform the Explorer into one of those self-driving cars, and he would be on his way to the Gull, or a liquor store, still open on a Sunday night. He took in as much air as he could, let it out slowly, telling himself the feeling would pass, that since rehab it had always passed, that he didn't need to pull over and sit on the side of the road until the feeling did pass. It still didn't take much, even after a meeting. Or maybe it was because of the meeting. Who the hell really knew? Sunny always said that drinking never really made her feel better about things when she felt as if her life were turning to shit, but that it sure as hell never made her feel any worse. What had Sinatra said that time when Jesse and some buddies had gotten drunk and gone to see him in Las Vegas? When Frank was old and starting to forget the lyrics and acting impatient for his own show to be over, as if it were a ball game that had gone all too long. We feel sorry for all you people who don't drink, because when you wake up in the morning, that's as good as you're going to feel the rest of the day. Do you still miss it? Sue had asked. Every day. He slowed the car, making his way down Main Street in the gathering darkness, past the theater, taking the turn and driving past his old condominium, a couple blocks from the Gull. Then past the Gull and down through the Swap until he was in front of the Scupper, outside which Annie Fallon's night had changed, and nearly her life. He slowed as he passed the Scupper and looked through the front window, and saw people laughing and talking, all of them with drinks in their hands. The people he served and protected. He hadn't done much of a job protecting Paul from getting one to the back of the head from the .22 that had killed him. Dev had the bullet. One shot, he said, rattling around inside the brain. Goodbye. When Jesse got home, he was so tired, it was as if he'd walked from Marshport. But somehow his thirst had made him hungry. So he decided to fry up a burger, truck stop style, and watch Sunday night baseball. Baseball was usually all he watched on television. Baseball or westerns. That was it, all the company he got from TV. Cole hadn't been around much lately. He'd completed his state cop training, been assigned to their office in Northampton. He had a steady girlfriend there, even though he constantly told Jesse that talking about going steady dated Jesse more than his taste in music did. That was Cole's life right now, learning to be a cop in western Massachusetts, and girls, or girl, singular, in this case. Katie was her name. Jesse still hadn't met her, but the kid seemed happy enough, even talking occasionally about going back to Los Angeles someday and seeing if he had the chops for robbery-homicide. He said one time that he'd thought about taking Jesse's name instead of his mom's. But Cold Stone sounded too much like he ought to be a fucking ice cream store. He stayed with Cole Slayton. When the burger and fried potatoes Jesse had cooked up with onions were ready, he set up a TV table in front of the set. Did they even still call them that? Jesus, he was getting old. He pointed the remote and switched on the game. Red Sox against the Yankees, and saw that it was only the fourth inning. Some people wrung their hands over how long the games were, not Jesse. They could play all night as far as he was concerned. Long games made his nights feel shorter. He reached for his iced tea, held up the same tall glass that used to hold Johnny Walker or Dewar's, saw the same amber color he used to see when it was scotch in the glass, with just the right amount of soda. He'd always liked watching baseball when he'd had a few. No way of getting around that. "Here's looking at you," he said, his voice sounding too loud in the empty room, even over the sound of the announcers. When he'd finished eating and cleaned his plates, he called Sonny Randall. She answered right away. "Damn," she said. "It's never good when the police call." Just the sound of her voice made him feel better, less like the alonest man around. He told Sonny once that Molly had said that about him, and Sonny had said, "Wait, somebody else besides me picked up on that?" "Your father was a cop," Jesse said. "You say that when he calls?" "Are you calling to chat?" Sonny said. "Or do you need crime-stopping tips?" Jesse said, "What are you wearing?" "Does asking a question like that make you feel out of step in the modern world?" Sonny said. "And proud of it. What would you say if I told you I just got out of the shower and was wearing nothing except a towel?" "I'd go downstairs and get in the car and drive down there with the siren on," he said. "Actually," she said, "I've got goop on my face, and I'm wearing baggy gray sweats." "Still coming," Jesse said, "just no siren." She laughed. "If you're gooped and saggy, you must be alone." "I said baggy, Chief Stone, not saggy," Jesse said. "Where's your ex?" "Richie and his son are in Los Angeles visiting the boy's sainted mother. They were supposed to stay a week. They've stayed 2. "How's it going with the 3 of you?" Jesse said. "Or 4, counting Rosie." Rosie was Sonny's dog. "Love the boy," she said. "Still love the father. It's that thing about the 3 of us that's the problem." "Ongoing," Jesse said. "Ongoing," she said. "I'm good at a lot of things. Stepmom isn't one of them, and might not ever be. And he's talking about marriage again." "Love is lovelier," Jesse said. "Theoretically." "Are you and Richie currently together?" "If you mean together in a carnal sense, no. He needs time to figure out how to be a dad." "So the 2 of you aren't doing it in the changing room of boutiques the way we did that time in Beverly Hills?" "That was more a one-off," she said. "2-off, as I recall." There was a silence now from both of them. Neither, Jesse knew, was uncomfortable with this kind of silence. Finally, Jesse said, "Change of subject? And stop talking dirty to each other? Is this really you?" "Caught a dead body today at the lake," Jesse said. "Or Suit did. Do tell." He did. When he finished, Sonny said, "I'm sorry for the dead fellow. But maybe this is a good thing for you, maybe even better than sex." "Speak for yourself," he said. "If I use the blue light and the siren, I could still be there in 30 minutes. "I thought we were going to hit the pause button on being friends with benefits," she said, "and just try being good old friends." "Thinking that's starting to get old," he said. "Maybe we should put our therapists in a room and let them figure out where this relationship should go," Sonny said. "It's a relationship again?" "Always was," Sonny said. "Dr. Silverman and Dr. Dix, fighting for the title," Jesse said. "We could make it pay-per-view." There was another silence, and then Jesse said, "You said you still love Richie. What about me? Am I still first runner-up?" "Let me get back to you on that." Jesse said, "Do you really have goop on your face?" "I might have lied about that," she said. Then she told him what she was really wearing, or, more accurately, not wearing. Then they did talk dirty to each other. It was, Jesse decided, better than baseball.